Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Really excited and looking forward to this episode for a couple of reasons. First of all, we haven't heard a lot from Sheriff Nanos. He has basically closed down most people in terms of giving any sort of interviews, despite many reporters badgering him that we all know about. Nevertheless, he has chosen not to give press conferences and not to give many interviews. But he did an exclusive interview for a young man named Wyatt Sharp. Now, Wyatt Sharp and I kind of go way back to really when I first started in this business. And it's been an interesting journey just watching him grow. We see so many young men right in true crime that unfortunately have completely lost their way and just are a mess. So how wonderful is this going to be for him to grace our stage? Somebody who is talented, somebody who is driven, and somebody who I think we are all going to watch in the future. I think he's got a great future ahead of us, but today we're going to focus on his exclusive interview of Sheriff Nanos, because as I always say, whether you like him or you don't, he's in the know. He is in charge of the investigation. So without further ado, let's welcome to the stage Wyatt Sharp. Hi, how are you, Wyatt? Oh, I'm doing great. Good. And I don't know if we'll have a delay or not. You're in Canada, right?
I am. I'm in Toronto.
I've never been, but I have been to Calgary and Vancouver, and I was so impressed by both.
Yes, it's very nice, I have to say. And in Canada, I do a lot of political coverage, so I get to, you know, follow the U.S. politics without having to be ingrained in it myself and being able to take a step back whenever I need to.
Well, I really like that you cover everything. And true crime is one of course, the genres or area that a lot of people like to cover. And you do such a great job at it. I first want to ask you, what made you want to interview Sheriff Nanos, the sheriff of Pima County?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I had kind of noticed that he wasn't doing a lot of interviews. And so I thought, obviously, as a journalist, it's my duty to reach out to him and to ask him to do an interview, just as many local, affiliate stations in the Tucson area are doing, but also outlets across the country. But I thought, I'll send him a text message. He's probably not going to answer. Or if he does, it might be a simple, sorry, I'm too busy, or no, thank you. But he ended up saying yes. And I definitely think that part of that, and, you know, viewers will know Ashley Banfield. I was on with her yesterday and she made the point, you know, maybe he thought it was for a high school project or something. He thought it was going to be, you know, a super easy breeze of an interview. But I was really, really happy that he agreed to it, because I think obviously the public has been criticizing him right now. And I said to him when I asked him for an interview, I said, even my generation, Gen Z, I'm 17 years old, is very interested in this case. So I think by you coming on my show, it would be an opportunity to kind of give you a fair shake and let you explain firsthand what you're doing in this investigation, specifically to a generation who does have some, you know, feelings of apathy towards this case, but more specifically, the department. And so again, I was very pleased that he agreed to the interview. And I thought he did a relatively good job answering the questions, especially with, you know, how limited the information is that he's able to give out to the public right now.
Okay, so a couple of things you just said. Gen Z is apathetic toward the Guthrie case. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think just in general, with respect to true crime, with respect to politics, like Gen Z can feel apathetic just because of how busy their day-to-day lives are with school and, in, you know, the case of the summer, part-time jobs and such as well. But when they do hear about the Guthrie case, it's usually a headline in the media. And frankly, a lot of the headlines have not been very complimentary towards the sheriff. And so my pitch to him for the interview was, a lot of Gen Z, if they do hear your name, it might not be in the most positive light. So maybe if you come on my show, it can be an opportunity for you to explain to Gen Z kind of what you're doing in this investigation and why Gen Z should feel hopeful about the state of this investigation. And so again, I thought that he really did a good job, specifically in terms of being transparent about what he can and cannot answer. Like on the physical evidence questions, for example, I had the questions, obviously I had to ask the questions, but I knew that he probably wasn't going to be able to give an answer on many of those questions. And he was transparent about that. He said if he couldn't answer a question, he said it point blank. He didn't try and go around it necessarily. Obviously, I wish that he had been a little more direct in some of the questions, but optics wise, again, I understand why perhaps he wasn't.
So let me ask this, Wyatt. When you first contacted him, did you get through to him or it was his secretary, his PIO? Explain the process just really quick, how you got through to him, and then did you have to pitch him?
Yeah, so I messaged him, I think it was on Saturday night. I was at my cottage of all places, and as one does on the weekend, doing like a little bit of casual work. And I thought, I'm going to send a message. But I had a feeling, to your point, if I go to the media department, if I go to the PR department, they would give the standard kind of non-committal response of like, yeah, let's see what we can do. Maybe we'll try and make this happen later on, but we're really busy right now. So I bypassed that. I went to him and I sent him a text message and said, Sheriff Nanos, would you be able to do an interview with me? I mentioned that piece about Gen Z in my original message to him. And within a few minutes, to his credit, he wrote back and said, yes, happy to do it. When works for you? So I said, does sometime Monday or Tuesday work? And he said, yep, let's do Tuesday. So we did it. And again, to his credit, 30 minutes of answering my questions, which I'm sure as the lead investigator in this case, he has no shortage of people requesting his time. So I was very appreciative that he did so.
All right. So let's get down and dirty into this interview.
Yeah.
I have watched the interview, but many of our members probably haven't seen it. So I want to ask you some questions about it. First of all, I want you to tell us what the most surprising thing that Sheriff Nanos told you.
I would say a couple of things. The first, and by the way, if people haven't watched it, they can go on my YouTube page after we're done here, the Sharp Exchange, and the full interview is there, just because I think it is beneficial to, obviously I'm going to summarize it, but to hear him in his own words as well. But one of the most surprising things that he had said, you had seen Kash Patel, the FBI director, and him going back and forth in terms of headlines in the media. The FBI director, Kash Patel, did an interview on Fox News where he had said that if the FBI had been let into the investigation a little bit earlier and, you know, weren't withheld from the scene, it could have helped preserve some of the evidence. And so I thought, okay, if the FBI director is making that type of a statement, surely he has been in contact with the Pima County Sheriff, you would expect, even though it might seem a little bit unorthodox for an FBI director to be contacting a local sheriff. This case is anything but ordinary. And so you have, you know, I think a certain level of understanding that maybe there was a conversation between the two of them. But Chris Nanos said that they have never spoken, him and Kash Patel. He's never met Kash Patel. He said he thought that Kash Patel was misinformed, was his words, and he thought that some of the information that Kash Patel was putting out there into the public and that he was receiving was hurting the case, was the words that he used in the interview. So that was probably the most surprising, just because it was the most kind of direct response that he had given to Kash Patel thus far in terms of the previous comments that he had made. I also asked the question that everyone wants to know, and that is, 6 months in, as of Saturday, into this investigation, are we getting any closer to determining whether or not Nancy Guthrie is still alive? Right? He had said, I think it was 5 months ago in an interview with Elizabeth Vargas on News Nation, that he thought Nancy Guthrie was still alive. And he said, it was a different response than when he did that interview with Vargas. He said, if the Guthries believe that she's still alive, then so do I. But then he also said, what benefit does it, you know, have if I, as the sheriff, come out and say that that I think she's dead? And so that was interesting because it was very hypothetical, and it seemed as if he was trying to avoid hypotheticals for most of the interview. But that scenario in particular was very surprising. And just two more things. One of them, he talked a lot about forensic familial genealogy. I had asked him if that was being considered. He said it was, which was very interesting. And then he also said that the core investigative team from the very beginning remains the same.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk that things heads are rolling, and you know, that just isn't how the FBI works. Heads aren't going to roll in this case. I can just tell you, in my 28 years, I have never seen agents taken off a case unless they did something wrong. Right. In other words, if they committed some violation, yeah, they're snatched off. But just for, you know, not being able to solve a case in a particular amount of time, that's just, you know, I hate that that information is out there because it's just inaccurate, in my opinion. I want to pivot, though, off of a couple of things you said, Wyatt. So what was your take on him not answering that question about whether he believes Nancy Guthrie is alive or not? Because he didn't answer it. He skirted around it. And I guess he did. He said, well, if they believe she's alive, then I believe she's alive. What did you think about that answer?
I thought he was walking kind of a tightrope, so to speak. He wanted to keep the investigation's integrity paramount, and he didn't want to say anything that could risk that. But he also wanted to give the appearance that he was being transparent and that he wasn't hiding anything from the public. And so I think that by him giving the answer that he did, he was bringing a little bit of empathy into kind of the dynamic here for the Guthrie family in terms of not wanting, not wanting himself to say anything that could end up hurting the Guthrie family or that the Guthrie family could be frustrated with, which I did ask him because there had been some reports that there was a bit of tension between him and between the Guthrie family. And he said that the relationship between him and the family is good. He said Savannah has my contact information, but that they haven't spoken recently. He said Savannah has her own team of people who she's working with, which I thought was interesting given that he's the lead investigator, if you will, on this case. So from that perspective, I guess I would just say, in terms of, again, that tightrope that he seemed to be walking for most of the interview, he answered the question, but obviously not to the extent that people were wanting him to. People, I think there's been such a mass hysteria, so to speak, surrounding this case of people, not just in Tucson, but across the country, as I said earlier. And unfortunately, with the answer he gave, even though that's the necessary answer to protect the integrity of the investigation, it really, I think, is just going to leave people more and more curious.
Yeah, I have to say that was one of the answers I was really disappointed with. Yeah. I just have to say that. I don't think it's ever right as an investigator to have that emotional response. In other words, well, whatever the family says, I'm going with. I couldn't decide whether it came off flippant. I know he didn't mean it that way, but it kind of just sounded that way. Or whether it was just like an escape.
Yeah.
I don't want to answer this question, so I'm going to escape by saying whatever they think, that's what I think. So it was just kind of odd.
Yeah, and I mean, he didn't want to answer any of the physical evidence questions either, right? I had asked him questions about the physical evidence, about the blood trail, whether or not there was blood inside and outside of the house. I also asked him about the reporting that there was a flower pot that was, you know, again, reportedly set to allow for a faster escape for the intruder. He didn't answer those questions either, which, back to my previous point, he seemed to want to not release those details for the sake of the investigation. But I will say, again, I was disappointed with the answer on whether or not she's still alive as well, because the public has been following this case very intently. And I think they do deserve some type of an answer from the sheriff's office on that very, very basic question. I think obviously it's the unfortunate question, it's the uncomfortable question, but it's the one that people want answers to.
Yeah, you know, I do think this, though. I've always wondered how closely he follows things the family says and things that are out there. And there were two responses he had that really caught my attention. And one was related to this, because Savannah Guthrie gave a very strong message. She said, and this is not quite verbatim, but certainly catches the essence, that she spoke to God and God spoke to her and God told her that Of course, Nancy is with me. Words to those effect. Mm-hmm. And so that would not comport with what he answered, which was, well, they think she's alive, so I'll just go with that. So it made me wonder, Wyatt, if he doesn't really keep track of what Savannah has said.
Yeah, I mean, I think to that point, right, like, again, he's walking this very, very tight rope. I think right now what he really relied on is the fact that the, you know, FBI is handling a lot of it. The Pima County Sheriff's Office is involved in a lot of it as well. And sorry, there's a hammer outside of my office if your guests are wondering, or if your listeners are wondering what it is. But there really is kind of a consistent effort right now to figure out kind of what it is that's happening around this investigation. And the fact that he didn't give an answer on this question in particular really, I think, doesn't just disappoint people who are watching the interview, but it also probably makes the Guthrie family a little bit puzzled. I don't know. I'm sure he's had, you know, maybe some communication with them in the past on whether or not he thinks that she's still alive, in terms of just being a little bit realistic on things. But I think they are probably wondering the answer to that question as well.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And the other thing, the secondary thing that made me think he's not really paying as close attention as I would have thought was on Derek Colella. He was talking about, as you recall, the information pertaining to all these people writing these bogus notes, right? And that they're going to be prosecuted. And he brought up the fact that Colella, he said, well, that boy, or something to that degree, that boy in California, he was charged and got 10 years. And that is absolutely incorrect.
Yes.
He's got a plea agreement. It's 5 months probation, or I'm sorry, 5 years probation. And he hasn't even really been sentenced, but that's the plea agreement.
Right.
I was really surprised that he doesn't even know that Colella didn't get 10 years, or that he wasn't even sentenced yet. I was surprised.
I was surprised by that too. And to be honest, your viewers might realize I was looking down a lot in the interview because I was trying to cross-reference some of my notes to determine what he had previously said. And so when he mentioned that in the interview, I didn't quite catch it. And I'm a little mad at myself for not catching it in the moment. But it does make you wonder, because with respect to the team of people around him, like, they have a Pima County paid information officer as well, who likely has been sitting on their hands. We haven't seen them a lot in the media. With respect to DNA, the questions that I asked him on that, we haven't seen you know, a whole lot on that. And he kept on saying, well, I don't have a lot of information on DNA. That's all with my team. I can't get to that information right now. So it makes you wonder about the people who are kind of around him right now and kind of how they are informing him. And you see this, whether it's in, you know, true crime cases, whether it's in political examples as well. And that is that the team around someone really determines how they portray themselves and how they present themselves. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of that in this investigation as well. And it goes back even to the fact that obviously I'm very happy that I got the interview, but in most situations, if I had reached out to, say, the New York City police chief, let's just say as an example, you know, with a text message, he would have said, I have to loop in my team. I have to connect people. There wouldn't have been that, yes, I'm just going to do the interview with you, without perhaps clearing it with my team first and making sure that from a PR perspective, it's okay. So it seems like almost a lack of coordination, so to speak, behind their efforts right now.
And that's an interesting perspective. I think it is, it's good to be king.
Yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
My sense throughout this whole situation is, and I've seen it before with different, what we call SACs, special agents.
Yeah.
We don't call them SACs in the FBI. We call them SACs. We see that.
Right.
There's a lot of SACs, and man, they are king or queen, and you can even do one thing wrong and you're out, you know, this, you're that, you're not where you were. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. It's awful. And that's what I really think we're experiencing here with him. But I want to segue into, well, let me make sure that there was nothing else you wanted to say on that point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think just in general, though, like with respect to what he said, like there was also the time that I asked him about whether or not he believes that the person who is responsible for this could still be in the Tucson area. And to that, he said something to the effect of, oh, absolutely, could be sure, right? Like he seemed almost unsure of even some of the answers that he himself was providing to me. And so I just think in general, that's the driving force behind a lot of the criticism in which he is facing, because he is trying to be, I think, a little bit transparent, but the sole quality of some of his answers is counteracting that.
Right. And of course, then not only did he say, yeah, well, of course, yeah, he could be, but he could be, you know, there's New York and there, I think he mentioned New York and then Mexico. And then he kind of went off on this tangent, naming all these cities and leads that came in from different cities. And I remember thinking, I know what you're getting at, Wyatt. And what
yes.
you're trying to get answered is, listen, is this local like we think? Or is this somebody who transcended into this area? That's what your point was. And he was just kind of scattered with the answer. But I think he answered it to the best that he was going to.
I think so too. I also would just say that I think there was a lot of comments online about how the sheriff was giving answers. As someone had said and messaged me that he thought there was a lot of word salads was the way that they had presented it, which, as you know, anyone who's been PR trained would tell you that sometimes if you get asked a question that you don't know how to answer, that's the route that you have to take, so that if someone is just kind of passing by, it's not obvious that you're not answering the question, which he definitely did do on a number of the questions. And that one was one of them for sure, because I think the people in the Tucson, Arizona area are wondering what's up. He had told the Arizona Republic newspaper something to the effect of, you know, he acknowledged that he closed down the scene too early, but then he told KVOA, the local affiliate station, that he had no regrets and that suggesting otherwise was silly, was I think the word that he had used. And so, like, people in Tucson, I think, are a little bit fearful themselves as to whether or not, as you say, the person was local, what kind of is happening now with respect to the investigation. So me asking that question was an attempt to clear that up a little bit, but I think to your point, instead he went and mentioned something that was just factually inaccurate. And to an extent, when I was conducting the interview, there's almost a point where the audience is smart enough to acknowledge that the interviewee, in this case Sheriff Nanos, did not answer the question. And I felt like at that point I didn't necessarily need to push too much more, because I think it was pretty clear to the average person watching, as you say you noticed, he didn't answer that question. So then strategically I decided, okay, let's move on and get to some of the more newsworthy things that maybe he would be able to answer. But it's definitely a balancing act, right? Like, when you have 30 minutes goes by very quickly and you want to make sure that you can get as much in there as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the questions, though, that you ask, he actually answered very crisply. And I want to say three different times said, basically, Cash Patel doesn't have his facts straight. Cash Patel is not informed. Cash Patel doesn't know. And Cash Patel, saying it kind of nice, is wrong. And he doesn't owe me an explanation. That whole thing with Cash, that is one that he didn't skirt at all. What did you think?
Yeah, he didn't. And I think
punch. It was a gut punch.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm noticing some of your viewers are mentioning the audio is not too good. I don't know if there's something we can do to fix that or not. But can you hear me okay?
I think it's on your end. I heard a bunch of construction and then the construction.
Is it fine now? Can you can
no,
hear me?
I can still hear construction.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Hold on.
And there's, but keep going. We'll get through it. I think it sounded better when you removed your earbuds.
You can hear me now?
What do you think, audience? I would go ahead and keep talking.
Let's let them decide. All right. I'll keep talking. They can decide. On the Cash Patel example, right? Like, he basically had no choice but to respond unless he wanted to just sit there and let
Kash Patel walk all over him, because Kash Patel was the one who kind of started this back and forth in terms of that Fox News interview that he did, where he had said that, you know, Chris Nanos and the Pima County Sheriff's Department more broadly were not letting him into the scene. And, you know, he had obviously not a lot of complimentary words for him. So I think Chris Nanos, the reason he was so transparent there is he didn't want it to just seem like he was letting, again, Kash Patel walk all over him. He wanted to get his chance out there to have a headline that says Chris Nanos, you know, claps back at Kash Patel, which is the headline that he's getting from that comment.
Yeah. And that's the headline that he wanted to get, I think. I mean, I just think it's very interesting as an example. I don't know if you noticed this, but he said, listen, Kash Patel is a busy guy like me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have 1,500 people in my department. And it was so funny because I felt like he was sort of bantering Kash Patel, even though Kash wasn't there, that he was bantering, you know, who's the bigger king? When everybody knows who the bigger king is, but he wanted to fluff some feathers there. I just thought it was I appreciated that he hit it head on.
There's also
such an insult,
There's also, though, I think a little bit of, I don't want to say regret, but I think after the interview, he might have thought, I'm probably should have said that about Kash Patel. Like, it might have further disrupted the interview. After the interview was over, he messaged me with a little bit of concern for one of the posts that was made, which was just a clip of the interview. But it was a comment that he had made about Kash Patel. And I posted that as like a shorter clip of the interview, as one would do. But I think there was just confusion with him around the logistics of the interview and wondering whether or not the full thing was out there. But I think, again, just the sole fact that he messaged me specifically because he saw the Kash Patel clip, he was wondering, you know, I think why he said the stuff that he did and having perhaps a little bit of regret about that. But after I sent him the link to the full interview, he seemed to be okay with it. And so I think afterwards he felt, you know, happy again that he did the interview, got some questions answered, and perhaps is bringing a little bit more transparency to the investigation.
I agree with you. And I wondered if there was anything that he asked to be withheld or asked to not be clipped short. Did he give you any parameters like that?
Not really, like before the interview, no. So that was interesting because just after the interview was posted, I had, you know, me and my team put together different clips and stuff that we've been releasing of the full question and answer. Like, it wasn't edited in any particular way. It was just the clip where he commented on his relationship with Kash Patel. But I think what he thought was that it was going to be singled out as one of the few things that he said in the interview, which unfortunately is what happens in the news business. You know, if you're interviewing someone and in the whole interview, they give you a couple of headlines, that's, you know, where the focus is going to be. Because if you're someone who doesn't speak very often to the media, and then when you do speak to the media, in the case of my interview, you give a couple of word salads, but then a couple of direct answers, it's going to be those direct answers that get picked up by people. And so, again, I think it was just a little bit of frustration from him that the Patel answer was the one that was getting the most attention. But he was very, very gracious about it. And I think he was satisfied with, again, how the full interview ended up going. And he told me he watched the interview and stuff as well. So he's, I think, satisfied again with it.
Well, you can really, really see, though, the thorn that is in his foot. And of course, that's from the investigation from about 5 years ago that the FBI did descending on his department. And it's like that thorn has never been removed, even though somebody took the fall and Sheriff Nanos, you know, was saved. It still shed light on what was going on in that department. I mean, it's like one or two things, and it was either he was involved or he was too dumb to realize what was going on.
Yeah.
Right? And so he took the stance, you know, sorry, all this is happening in my department and I don't know about it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really bad when people are siphoning off a million. I can't remember the exact number, a million plus, and you as the sheriff don't know about it.
Yeah.
So there were, you know, there's a thorn and you could see it come out. So I was glad you asked the question. And the other thing that do you see this paradox here?
Yeah.
He didn't know, he says he didn't know about the malfeasance that took place. And then he is saying that Kash Patel doesn't know what's going on in his own department regarding this investigation in terms of whether they were involved within 4 days or weren't.
Right.
So yeah. Interesting to me.
He really seems to have perhaps a lack of unity, I guess is the way to describe it, within his department, which is not something that, you know, the Pima County Sheriff's Department can frankly afford. The last time they were in the news this publicly was for the Gabby Giffords investigation, which he talked about a little bit. He had said that that investigation was a little bit less of a kind of who did it type thing and more of a discovering what the motive was and discovering kind of what the reason was behind the investigation. So that's really interesting, I think. But just in general, like obviously the criticism of his deputies putting forth the non-confidence motion as well, he really has had a tough time politically, right? Like outside of his handling of this case. And so I think, you know, his shoulders have kind of been up really on defense ever since the start of this investigation, because he knows that one or two small mistakes could potentially be, you know, the end of his political career, or at least the end of his time in this position.
Yeah, it was interesting, the whole political undertone, not only of the interview when you were at that part, but like you said, just what's going on with this case and the politics that play into it.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I want to ask next about his discussion concerning the FBI and how few people are on this case. I don't know if you remember, but ABC reported, I believe, a dozen. And we may still be at a dozen, but he literally said these words, a handful of his deputy. And really, when he said the handful, it sounded like three.
Yeah, no, for sure.
A lieutenant, a sergeant, and then, yeah, somebody else in the chain of command, I think is what he said. And then he said, and then there's a few FBI agents, but of course they're part of a Safe Streets Task Force, which has about 24 people, but they're handling all sorts of cases. Were you surprised that he sort of coughed up what little manpower is left on this case?
Yeah, well, because I had tried to get him to quantify it a little bit, right, in terms of the task force and specifically some of the differences between the start of the investigation towards the point that we're at now. And same thing with the amount of leads that they've been receiving, right? I asked him how that compared from the beginning towards now. He said, as I told you before, right, that the core membership ever since day one of the investigation has remained largely the same. But in terms of that direct comparison, I was getting him to try and, again, quantify something. He said on day one, it was the task force, the FBI Violent Crime Task Force, which he's a member of, that was right there at the scene. The membership was there. I'm quoting him right now. And again, that goes back to the criticism between him and Kash Patel and the feud with that relationship, because at this point, you know, these two people are presenting different forms of facts, right? One of them is saying they were allowed on the scene. One of them is saying they weren't allowed on the scene. And so it really just seems very ununifying. And it seems very difficult to have hope that something could be solved in this investigation when there is so much politics at play, just solely for, you know, optics and wanting to get headlines out there to protect the reputation of those investigators involved, without realizing that Savannah Guthrie and her family are the ones facing this unimaginable tragedy. And in Savannah Guthrie's case, right, having to do it in front of the entire world. It's not like anybody else who, if this happened to them, it would be very tragic. Savannah Guthrie has obviously the tragedy that anybody else would have, plus a constant stream of headlines. And as you alluded to in your introduction, which I asked him about this as well, and that was the bad faith kind of members of the true crime YouTube ecosphere, if you will, right? There's a number of people who were on the scene of the investigation and who, you know, were going on to parts of the crime scene that they weren't allowed on, which he talked about as well. I think all of these bad faith actors put together, his point was that it makes it even more difficult to try and, you know, get some form of answer in the investigation.
Yeah, I heard him talk a lot about that. I have mixed views. I have this great video where actually the community neighborhood is just screaming at these people. It's sort of the other side of the pancake, as I always say. I mean, we know that some of the streamers out there, you know, putting on the mask of porch guy, running around, you know, the bathroom scene, some of that stuff was just terrible. But on the flip side, they were on public property. And also on the flip side, they were actually keeping the attention on this case when it was really, you know, the media had completely gone. It was almost disappearing from mainstream media completely. And only a few channels were even talking about it on a consistent basis. So I'm always have mixed emotions on it. But what he did say that I completely agree with was, I think he said he had over 180 calls, right? Or yes. I think it was 180 calls in 5 months. And I do agree that that is a problem. But when you look at some of the reaction of these neighbors, I don't know, Wyatt, if you've seen this clip I've shown, it's insane where they are just screaming and going berserk. And then, like I said, I see both sides of the pancake. But my point is, are they, you know, are the calls legitimate to call the police about? I don't know. All I'm saying is I see both sides of the pancake, but it was interesting to hear about how much effort and manpower Pima County is having to put on it. And that's not good.
Yeah, I agree. He really did also, though, talk about just like the sheer number of leads that they've been receiving and how, even though, again, it has slowed down, they really are having a difficult time even still comparing which ones are of good quality, which ones could be worth something in the investigation compared to those that couldn't. And he gave one example. He said that obviously, again, they're not coming in at the rate that they were initially. He said, we still get them. But he said, quote, in fact, I was just on an email with someone from Ireland who had a tip. All of these things are sent to the Guthrie Task Force, which consists of several of my detectives and several local FBI agents. So when he said that, I thought it was interesting just because it seems like he's engaging with some of these calls and with some of these tips and emails and such that he is receiving, even though seemingly, you know, someone in Ireland, and I'm sure a lot of the other tips, like his emails out there publicly, I'm sure a lot of these so-called tips that he's getting are just, you know, online people who have developed their own opinions on what is happening in relation to this case. And so from his perspective, it seems like maybe there should be some type of, it just seemed very odd to me that the sheriff himself was the one responding directly with these people who claimed to have tips without there being any kind of middleman, so to speak, or someone in between determining how valuable and how valid certain things actually were to the investigation.
No, you bring up a great point. And, you know, let me compare this. Does anybody think Cash Patel is entertaining any tips about the ransom notes?
No.
And emails? I mean, it's for a sheriff to be that in the weeds, but this is a high profile. It's the biggest case that will ever hit his career, even over the Gifford case, obviously.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, maybe that's why he's keeping his fingers in the pudding. Also because he's been called to task, right? He hasn't had information correct from day one. And so maybe he's trying to, you know, keep better tabs on the information. Just a couple more questions for you, Wyatt. If you could rewind, what do you wish you would have asked?
I wish, well, going back to the 10-year thing, right, with respect to that person who got sentenced, according to him, I would have pushed back a little bit more on that, just because I think the facts say otherwise, and I would have probably, again, went back and done something about that. And then I guess this one was a matter of time, and with the time that I had, I don't necessarily regret it, but if I had more time, I would have pushed maybe a little bit harder on the physical evidence questions. I know the two that I asked were wishful thinking in terms of the fact that I knew he probably wasn't going to address those two questions, but there definitely were some questions that I had about suspect vehicles, about also why the vehicle of Annie and Tommaso was held for 50 days, not because they're guilty in any way, of course, but because, you know, what was it that they were getting from the car? Did they think that there was anything that could be valuable in that car that they couldn't find elsewhere? So just little things like that, that obviously I have. But I will say, again, he was gracious in the sense that he said, you now have my contact information if you ever need anything. So I'll give it some time. And depending on how the investigation goes, maybe I'll request another interview and then we can be back here talking again.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's good you have that contact with him and have built some rapport with him. I really appreciate you reaching out to him. I've always said on this channel that it is so critical that, and it, usually it's really critical when we get information from law enforcement, because that's the one thing you know you can trust. And unfortunately, this case has been crazily tainted because of the complete distrust that we've never seen happen before. I've never seen it where, you know, you have three different avenues that people were going down to get him ousted. None of them worked and it's all over. There's no other avenues left. But how unusual that was. And so now there's kind of this complete distrust when he opens up and says anything. But yeah. I still pay very close attention because, just like when Savannah talks, because I know she's in the know and I know Nanos is in the know, that means we might be able to glean something more and be more in the know.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, right, I mean, Savannah's a lovely person. Anyone I talk to who has met her and who knows Savannah will say that. No one has ever said a bad thing about her. I think from that perspective, it's important to understand, just because there was an interview that Ashley Banfield had done with Sheriff Nanos in, like, I think the second day of the case, where Chris Nanos had said that Savannah Guthrie was very helpful to have involved in the investigation because of her, you know, knowledge, because of her skill set in law and you know, legal cases and such. And so from that perspective, I think it really just speaks to, obviously, it's, you know, Savannah Guthrie's mother. So as any daughter would, there is that incentive to want to bring them home. But Savannah is bringing something that not many other people would be able to bring. And that is a level of understanding that can help contribute to law enforcement's understanding of this case. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be directly with Chris Nanos, and I'm not going to, you know, get into why that is, because frankly, nobody knows, and that would just be speculation. But I do think right now that obviously she's communicating with her own team. Chris Nanos confirmed that as well. And so she certainly is not losing hope, and nor does, you know, the rest of the Guthrie family seem to be.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the nuggets you got out of the sheriff, was that that is how the communication is going. I mean, he had said that on another interview, that he really wasn't communicating with her anymore. But he reiterated that she has a team she goes through, and that's going very well. So
I would just say really quickly, like, the reason, because I know the interview that you're talking about with respect to not talking to Savannah, but the reason I asked it this time in particular is because Saturday is obviously the 6-month mark. And I thought, well, maybe there would be a conversation, and maybe, you know, after that interview, maybe there will be, right, in terms of the fact that we're coming up on the 6-month mark. Maybe she wants some type of reassurance, you know, from the sheriff. So, I mean, again, I do give the sheriff credit, but he has faced a lot of criticism. Your viewers are aware of that criticism. There was Breonna Whitney who had gotten the, or I guess who had received a message a few days into the investigation from Chris Nanos, where he was angry that she was texting him at a certain hour of the evening. There was criticism that he was out at a sports game when he perhaps shouldn't have been. So when you're involved in this type of an investigation, your entire life basically and lifestyle is under the microscope. And it seems as if there's perhaps not as much awareness of that as there perhaps should be on his part. So, but again, I don't say that to be, you know, hypercritical. I just think that he probably should be a little bit more aware of that, just in terms of the fact that it's obviously very difficult for the Guthrie family. And there is millions of people around the world who are, have been following this case and are looking for more answers.
Well said, Wyatt. And I want to piggyback off of what you're saying right here is you're talking about that he should be more aware of sort of how he became such a spectacle of distrust and a spectacle of somebody that wasn't giving the proper attention to the case, if you will, especially early on. I just want to say this is that as a law enforcement officer, it's innate. It is innate that when you, we call it when the bell rang, my boss would say, the bell is ringing, everybody. In other words, when the bell rings and you're needed in the ring, everything stops. That means you've got a kid's birthday party. Guess what? You're not going. You have an anniversary dinner. You're not going to that either. You have whatever it might be. You stop because at that point in the case, right, the bell is rung and you're in the fight. And these are the early stages, right? Obviously, as things wane, you have a lot more time. But that was, I think, for me, the shocker. For instance, when he went to that basketball game, and I know he had tickets that somebody had given him. And I do feel bad that apparently he had lost his brother sometime in advance of this. I feel bad about that. But the bell had rung. Wyatt, he was not in the ring. He left the ring. He left the ring on multiple occasions, like the Whitney thing. You should be in the ring. You're there, and you're.
Which, by the way, that was like a. I think I saw her in an interview say that that was like a week into the investigation, and I was thinking, I was like, it'd be one thing if it was a year into the investigation, and you know, he's at a kid's birthday party. Let's just say he can't answer a text message in the exact moment, but this was a week into the investigation, and it was 10 minutes in Arizona. All of the newscasts go to air at 10 p.m. And it, I think she said got the message at like 9:50 p.m. because they were looking to confirm something, as journalists have to do, 10 minutes before they went to air, and she had got that message. So it was a little bit puzzling to me. And I saw that interview actually before I reached out to him for an interview. And so it did paint a picture in my mind of, oh my goodness, like, what is this going to be like? Like, how is he going to, you know, conduct himself? What is the cadence going to be in terms of his responses and such? So it really was just interesting to me. And I will say I did not have the same experience as Breonna, but I think that her experience, and I think she's a terrific reporter, has been very credible as well.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Well, Wyatt, I can't thank you enough for joining us at Break the Case. My audience loves you. And
thank you. I apologize for all the noise. I don't know what was happening. We have bad luck.
No problem. And I know I always appreciate being on your show. And I want to say this. You got to make me one promise. And that is,
you bet.
You become super famous and you're on 2020 or what are some of the others?
Maybe Dateline, who knows?
60 Minutes, Dateline. You cannot forget me.
You're going to be the first guest.
Okay, good. I've got it. Everybody heard that. All right. Excellent. Wyatt, till next time. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Everybody, that was Wyatt Sharp. You've got to catch him on the Sharp Exchange. He's on YouTube. He's on all the podcast networks. And he's just a special young man, you know, really a prodigy. You don't have to be a singer or a trumpet player or a gymnast to be a prodigy. He is somebody that at a very youthful age, and like I said, I think I first intersected with him right when I first got in the media setting, which that's Brian Enten's fault. He's really something. So watch him. He does a huge array of interviews. It's definitely general news in every single realm. But it's really fun when he does dive into the criminal piece of it. And you can see, compare this to some of the other guests we've had on here. And mostly we have amazing guests that are very well versed in the case that they come on. But just compare anytime you're watching News Nation, my channel, or any place else, how many guests come on that don't know the real facts, the down and dirty details. And you saw there why it knew them. And that's what I think am most impressed about. When he decides to do an interview, or he decides to either get interviewed or do an interview, he's going to be well versed on the facts. And that's the number one thing, at least for me, I'm looking for. Half the time I go, somebody will DM me, they say, oh, you got to watch this. And then I'll go over there and watch it. And I'm like, oh, I can watch it for 5 minutes because the guy has already made a blatant faux pas in terms of understanding the facts of the case. So anyway, that's what I personally look for. And that's what Wyatt will give you. And that's what you're going to get here too. We are going to get back on schedule. I am headed to Montana tomorrow morning at the crack of dawn. I am going to be, I did this last year too, be instructing a group of amazing women. I think it's 18 to 20 in firearms and self-defense at a huge retreat. And there's a big price tag paid to go to this ranch that where Yellowstone was shot and everything else. This is, my understanding is 100,000 acre ranch, including all the land. Most of that's owned by the government, but they lease it. It is just the most beautiful place possibly I've ever been. It's untouched by anything really, but nature and some log cabins, horses and cattle. And so anyway, I'll be there instructing for the next 4 days. I don't get back until Sunday night, 2 full days of teaching and then 2 days of travel. And all the money, and this is where what I wanted to discuss with you, all this money being raised, and it's a lot, is going to help victims of sexual abuse and assault. And it's just such a great charity. It's so wonderful. When I get back, I'm going to give more details on the charity, just so you know about it. I also want to call your attention to the philanthropist. I actually interviewed him about the case of his first wife, who was horribly sexually abused by the town sheriff in Utah. And he did an interview with me. He was, oh my gosh, he was so great. There was a book written by a woman named Emily Benedict and wrote about her life. It's a great book. I'll have all even more details when I get back because this show wasn't about that. So I don't have all of that up there. But I just wanted to let you know it's a wonderful charity. And the keynote speaker this year is Elizabeth Smart. And I'm really looking forward to personally meeting with her, hanging out with her, and hopefully she is gracious enough to come on the show on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So be looking for that. I'm hoping that she will carve out a little time, but she's the keynote speaker. So we'll be hanging out. I don't know. I might even be in the same cabin with her. So nevertheless, I'm hoping to not have our show schedule interrupted, but it may be interrupted just a little bit. So I appreciate y'all with your patience with the schedule being off. I'm hoping to get back to normal starting into August, where we're just every morning at 10 or every evening at 5 or both. So everyone, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Until next time, may justice be served for the Guthries, for Nancy Guthrie, and for all the missing.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.